on sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
LeBron James, the king, such a humble king he is, breaks 40K over the weekend, whether or not you are impressed. It is a feat, and he is at the top of that mountain, and he's trying to bring the Lakers to the top of the mountain where they once were back in 2020. And he's got to do it against a Sacramento Kings team that he has not, the Lakers have not beaten the Kings yet this season, yeah. And LeBron is questionable, as Jason Anderson from the Sacramento Bee reported yesterday. He is questionable. Anthony Davis is probable, and this is a very important game for the Lakers. The Lakers, who have been up and down, they took some swings on a Gabe Vincent, who was supposed to be, honestly, that season ended with Gabe Vincent being the guy that was supposed to replace D'Lo,
yes.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yes,
it was supposed to be Gabe Vincent. It was supposed to be Austin Reeves, mm-hmm. Okay, LeBron, AD, and then Vanderbilt or some lockdown guy. And then it turned into Cam Reddish. Oh, people don't know Cam Reddish. He was the guy.
No,
I mean,
I know.
He was actually the most talented dude out of that class, Cam Reddish. And he started out hot, if I'm not mistaken. Everyone said, that's our secret weapon.
It was their Lonnie Walker.
Yes, that is our weapon X that we are going to unleash on everyone. And Cam Reddish didn't end up working out for him.
Nope.
And you put all that into a pot, and the Lakers are trying to stay out of the play-in, as the Kings are as well, trying to get out of the bottom half of the play-in, which I think is more realistic at this point. And the Lakers are a half game ahead of the Warriors, who the Warriors have the Bucks tonight, probably with no Giannis. That's just my gut feeling based on my injury history with Achilles and what it looked like when Giannis tried to take a jump shot a couple days ago. And they are a game and a half behind the Kings. So this is a huge game for everybody involved. Chris Watkins, what do you make of the Lakers and what they've brought to the table this season?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is size. Like, definitely, if you're going against the Lakers, they're a team that does present some lineups that could be troublesome for the Kings. I mean, you know, to run Austin Reeves, and they like Torian Prince, who's a pretty decent forward that he likes to take a ton of shots. Rui Hachimura, they play Jackson Hayes a couple times. They're a team that has a lot of length, and they're definitely paint-based for sure. I mean, they're not really a team that you have to worry about a ton from the perimeter. It really is LeBron, who takes a ton of threes now at this stage in his career. D'Lo takes a ton of threes at this stage in his career. That's what Torian Prince and Cam Reddish are there for. But a majority of their work is getting done in the paint. Mm-hmm. We've talked tons this year, and it hasn't just been this year, last year too, about the Lakers at the free throw line. That's a very real thing. That's the thing that you really have to try and take advantage of today. We know the Kings are already a terrible free throw shooting team, mm-hmm. but if you're going to be in a situation where, you know, the Kings, let's just say they go 14 of 20 from the free throw line, the Lakers are honestly probably going to get at least 30 free throws in. And so if you're getting outscored from the free throw line 14 to 25, mm-hmm. that's an 11-point difference there. That's how the Lakers make up a lot of these games. And so Kings have to be smart. Sabonis has fouled out in two straight games now. Can't make it a third for a team that, again, foul hunts. Sabonis is the only big down there. They've just got to be smart tonight. They have to play smart. It's going to be in LA, so they're going to have to ride the wave of, if the Lakers go on a run, that crowd's going to get popping, mm-hmm. and you know, LeBron and D'Lo are probably going to point at their ice in their veins and hold
and
three
Austin
guns
Reeves,
up,
Austin and Reeves, Austin
all
Reeves.
Of it. You're going to have to ride all of that wave, but just keep your head down. I'm looking at it. The Kings have beaten the Lakers 6 out of their last 7 times. They don't seem to really fear this team at all. They don't look at them as the hallowed Lakers that, you know, has this aura around them. They don't really, you know, it's part of the good part of De'Aaron being so measured. Doesn't really freak out about, oh my gosh, that's LeBron James, anything like that. And we know Sabonis against AD, that should be barbecue chicken. I don't think AD wants any of that physicality. So You know, make sure AD feels you when he's on defense. Sabonis, I want to see a lot of shoulder tonight. Mm-hmm. And just got to take care of business and try to not get into foul trouble. I think that's the one thing that could really get the Kings looking bad. We saw it against Chicago. If Keegan gets in foul trouble, HB gets in foul trouble, Sabonis gets in foul trouble, that's where these guys could really be at danger of playing into the Lakers style.
I'm looking here, as you mentioned, how the Kings have won 6 of 7. And this is not random. This is from Jason Timpf of Volume, and he does NBA for the Volume Podcast Network. He says, Sacramento's speed guards are very different from the shifty OKC guards and what they bring to the table. It's a bad matchup for the Lakers' backcourt. They need to come out sharp or they'll be down big early.
Love that.
That's something that I don't think we talk enough about. We talk about De'Aaron's speed, but not just the speed of the backcourt and the speed in which the Kings play.
Yeah.
And there might be a reason.
That's true too, right.
We talk about bad matchups and how, for whatever reason, the Pelicans are a bad matchup with the Kings, but the Kings are a bad matchup for certain teams.
Yes.
And maybe they're a bad matchup for OKC because of their speed. OKC, Shea is cool. He's doing an Instagram post while he's taking a jump shot. And the Lakers, you
fire
know.
Fire caption.
Always a fire caption. You have the Lakers, who they got to do 8,000 handshakes that LeBron remembers from 4 years old after every bucket. So by the time that happens, De'Aaron Fox has scored 4 points. He scored 4 points. So
it's a sick handshake, though.
They're all sick handshakes. Yeah, yeah.
Sick handshakes.
As we look at this matchup, maybe I should feel a little bit better because it's not about the name brands and the cachet that the teams have.
Yeah.
It's just a bad matchup for the Lakers.
It is. They like to slow it down. Like LeBron. LeBron's an older dude.
Yeah.
Newsflash. He's not trying to run. AD, he likes to get the ball in the post and go to work or hit his little face-up game. They're not trying to run. If the Kings can, and that's where the Kings have killed them recently, is just killing the pace. Like, mm-hmm. The Lakers, not just offensively, especially defensively, they're not trying to get back. And
right.
So the Kings, they're probably going to have a lot of 4-on-5s. You know, AD likes, he's kind of like Joel Embiid, where he ends up on the ground a lot and, you know, looking for fouls. He takes some time to get up.
Foul merchants.
LeBron, same thing. LeBron's at the point in his career. See a lot of 4-on-5s defensively from the Lakers side. LeBron's taking his sweet time getting back down the court. The Kings just have to play fast, have to be aware when 4-on-5s are occurring and take advantage, find the open man. And, you know, Alan, this one's the obvious one. And, you know, if you've watched any Kings game this year, you know how important. Just hit your shots. Hit your shots, and tonight looks infinitely easier. I think L.A., you know, the crypto.com is one of those like stage lit arenas where the court is lit,
that's
but the
right.
crowd isn't.
It's
so maybe
dark, yeah.
I think that helps. I still haven't figured out what's good and what's bad for your peripheral vision.
Well,
or
I think
not your peripheral. Help me out here.
Your depth perception.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think it just depends on the team. Some teams struggle with it. The Warriors.
The Kings seem to struggle with whatever's going on at Golden 1 Center. Nobody else seems to struggle.
Right. That's also true. The Warriors cannot shoot down there in L.A.
Really?
With that backdrop. They've always struggled with it. The Kings, I just keep thinking back, Chris, to being at that spot with you when we watched the game
That's
together.
Right.
And it was a nationally televised game with the Kings, and they just beat the brakes off the Lakers
yep.
from start to finish. So if I'm Mike Brown, I'm replaying that game over
yes.
and over again because you have to do the same thing, same game plan. Don't let them breathe. Don't let them gasp for air and say, okay, now we can keep rolling. Because that's exactly what they did with the Bulls.
Yep.
And you gave them some air to breathe, and they took it and just kind of rolled with it. Let's hear from Steven, 916-339-1140. All guests and callers, join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. What's up, Steven? What you got for us?
Good morning, boys. Real quick, I don't like my brother. Me and my brother do not get along. So I guess I'm one of the few where
You don't like him. Like, is there real beef?
No, there's real beef. He punched me in the mouth and left me stranded in, like, 90 miles away from my car. So,
okay.
I mean,
okay, that's beef.
That's beef.
That's beef. There was a lot of extracurriculars, you know what I'm saying? I think we were feeling a little extra festive that day. But,
I hear
you. But I digress. My question is, do you guys feel like I feel like Mike Brown's a little stubborn, and I don't know if that's anywhere remote to being accurate. Because when Alex Len gets those very valuable minutes, and he's been getting some good minutes as of recent, from what I've seen, I feel like he's made an impact. His energy is great. He moves up and down the floor great. Is Mike Brown too caught up in his own game plan to the point where he becomes stubborn to veer off from his original game plan?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Steven.
That's a good question.
Well, I would say this. If he was stubborn, JaVale would still be playing.
Yeah.
There's a level of stubbornness, and there's a level of, you've played so poorly, even if I wanted to be stubborn. Because case in point, Harrison Barnes.
Yeah.
Harrison Barnes has the second most started games in the league. Yeah. Right? He's tied with a bunch of other guys for it, along with Sabonis. But he started the second most amount of games. Yeah. So Mike Brown is stubborn. It's just a matter of, have you played so poorly that I can't even be stubborn with you anymore?
Well, I mean, look at the Malik thing, though. Like, that's straight stubbornness. That's just I just feel this way, and I don't care how much you guys complain. I don't care who walks up and tells me, unless it's one of his assistant coaches that he really trusts. And even then, I'm sure he would want two or three assistant coaches to come up to him. I think he is stubborn, but I think that he – you know, as I'm sure everyone who is stubborn will tell you, he just truly believes that he's correct. And I think that, you know, until there is, to your point about JaVale, until there's reasonable evidence that shows, okay, I am, like, unless you can just throw it in his face and show him how stubborn he's being, I think he's not going to change his way. So I guess that is kind of the definition of being stubborn. I would say so, but I would just say more so in the sense of, I don't think he's not listening to internal. Like, if an assistant coach comes to him, I think he's always going to listen. I think if a player comes to him, he's always going to listen, and he's going to seriously take their input, but he's not going to cave to fan needs. Like, he's not going to cave to public pressure.
Well, it's also, who is there no one who would be the guy to say that? Because I'm trying to think, you're telling me not one guy has said, hey, you ever think about Malik in the starting lineup? Not one assistant coach?
I'm sure they've tossed it around. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm sure he listens to it. But I think the stubbornness shows up in the fact of, I'm going to lay out my case, and you have to come up with a better case than what I'm saying and show me why. Not only show me why you're right, but you also then have to show me why I am wrong on that. And that's just complete guess. Like, I haven't heard that's how any specific meetings have gone, but with what we've seen in the reluctance, I mean, you're right. Like, it's kind of crazy to assume that in 2 years, not one coach has came up and said, hey, maybe we should have a conversation about this. Like, there's no way that hasn't happened. So, I just think that he really believes that what he is doing is best for the team, and I think he would be willing to hear input, but at the end of the day, I think Mike knows he's the one who makes the decisions, and he's going to go down. The ship is going to sink with Mike Brown doing what he wants to do, not with him listening to what fans want or maybe even what ownership wants too.
When we return, more triple-double slander and a Hall of Famer gets another W. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
This is Sacktown Sports.
From the 916, JaVale, but JaVale is a marquee player. I mean, his face is on every flagpole banner at Golden One. That is from Folsom Mike. Yeah, I mean, maybe that's why it took as long as it did. They did bring him in, but he's on the bench now. When is the last time JaVale played?
That's a great question. Let me see here.
It's been a while.
It definitely has been a while. I just think that we're at the point where JaVale McGee is 36 years old, and you know he still can jump, but I think that his game for the past 15 seasons has been based off of athleticism. And yeah, when you're 36, you don't run, you don't jump the same way you used to, and so I think he's just had a lot lesser impact. And we also can't forget that, you know, last year in Dallas, they needed a center. They ended up trading for Rashawn Holmes this offseason. They needed a center, and they ended up cutting JaVale and didn't really seem too broken up about it.
So. I know hindsight is 20/20, but looking at it now, if you knew that JaVale just was going to ride pine, he would have been an interesting trade target, because I'll tell you what, he is in the Hall of Fame for fans wanting him. Fans of
for
other
sure.
teams.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't
a
know.
A guy like JaVale.
A guy yes. like JaVale. Yeah. I don't know how that rings true as far as the front offices, but he was a name we never talked about, and he maybe he was talked about, but he could have sweetened some deals for the Kings. Yeah. But
JaVale has missed the last 9 games.
He hasn't played in 9 games.
Yes. Last game he played was the first Denver matchup of the month. February 9th. That was 2 minutes.
A long time ago.
5 minutes against Cleveland, 5 minutes in Chicago. It's been a while. It's really been since the start of February, really, was the last time we saw JaVale.
Don't forget, in a little less than 45 minutes, your chance, 1 p.m., to win Chris Brown tickets on July 30th at Golden One Center. 916-339-1140. That is the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. All guests and callers join us from the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. That is going to happen at 1 p.m. Speaking of the text line as well, same number. When we were talking, Nate unfortunately missed. We had a whole video game conversation.
We did,
Nate,
actually, yeah.
And you missed out on that, and that is unfortunate. This is from the 916. Alan, when we were talking about Game Boy Advance SP, Alan, go to 1UP Retro.
Oh, yeah.
That place is sick downtown.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I've not been in there, but I've seen, I've gotten Instagram ads for it, and it looks
and now I will too.
Incredible.
It's Thank cool. you to the 916
like
for sending it out loud.
Yeah. You had an SP, though, real quick? Sorry.
It's too late, Nate. It's too late, but yes, I did.
SP sick.
Do you have a charger?
Oh, man, I might. All right, my brother might.
Yeah, call the brother. Hey.
I was the advance. He had the SP.
There you go. And some advanced stats, as you would call it, for a Hall of Famer that we speak of. Joey Chestnut.
Oh,
it was a
God.
No, hold on now. It was a party in Cleveland last night.
It was.
You
it was
had
a movie.
Dean Way. It was a movie. Too bad Carl Anthony Towns wasn't there. It was a movie. You had the Kelce bobblehead.
Yep.
Situation. So they're in the building.
Yep.
They're chugging
beers.
They're having a great time. They're playing the Celtics. So
that's right.
And they're getting
the comeback of the year.
They're getting their doors blown off. And then at halftime, Joey Gliz devoured 39 pierogies in just 2 minutes at halftime. And I believe he was battling.
Too.
Three other guys. Yeah.
It was a 1v3. And,
so he's expanding his brand now?
No.
He does pierogies too?
Yes. Like, that's the craziest thing about when you watch the July 4th hot dog eating contest is they'll go down the list of things that these guys set records for. And it's like, most oysters eaten in a minute with 48. And it's like, what?
I could do that.
How does that happen? I always think it. I mean, we could go to... We'll,
I could do tacos.
That's
I'll
summer
tell you
content.
I'd win tacos.
We'll
yeah,
do it
right.
on July 4th. We'll do the list of eating competitions.
I can't
that
wait for that. I can't wait for
Wings
that.
Wings is mine. There's no way I couldn't at least get a pole position in
okay.
the eating contest.
I'm good with that. Yeah. So Joey Chestnut gets another W. And then the Cavs
That's right.
get a W
That's
thanks
right.
to Dean Wade. He
Wade.
Does you know his best impression of exactly what happened last That's week right. with Max Strus.
Man.
And look. I'm telling you, I was very upset. Remember when they got my social security number in Vegas?
That's right.
All I wanted to do was how should I put this? All I wanted to do was support
yes.
my belief
yes.
that the Cavs
yes.
might be able to come out of the East.
Yeah. Yeah, I hated the bet. I think Vegas did you a favor, but you would be looking pretty good right now. I mean, the fact that they've had those two comebacks, and you know, I think the fact that it's Max
Donovan
Strus,
Mitchell did not play.
Exactly. It's Max Strus and Dean Wade that lead those comebacks. Like, that really does speak. Like, imagine that's like for the Kings equivalent is if we get a Duarte game where Duarte scores 15 points in the last 8 minutes and then a week later, Sasha does it. It's like, wait, you have those guys contributing at that level? We're not even talking about your main core four or whatever it is. That, I mean, you know, it's especially with how weak, frankly, the non-Celtic East looks right now.
Yeah.
It's not crazy because, you know, the Knicks have kind of slid back a bit.
The Sixers are cooked.
Even Cleveland's taking a small step back, but Orlando's
get healthy.
Hot right now. But, yeah, I don't know if they are going to get healthy. I saw people questioning Mitchell Robinson's going to come back. It's a matter of they don't know if Julius Randle's going to come back by the end of the season.
What's the OG situation?
OG, too. I think that I've heard he's supposed to maybe come back in a week or two, but that's not definitive at all. So it is open for Cleveland. Giannis Achilles and just general Doc Riversness, right?
Yes.
I think there's a chance, but also, again, I'm going to point it out because nobody else does. Cleveland did lose first series last year to the Knicks.
You point it out every time we bring them up.
It's just because, you know, there's a lot. I do it when we talk about OKC, too. I just feel like, you know, the Kings got that treatment last year where people say, oh, they don't have any experience. How are they supposed to do anything if they don't have any experience? Well, the Cavs, you know, they only have experience in losing. So until they win a series, I'm just going to be a little bit hesitant to say that they're going to come out of the East. I'd like to see them win one playoff.
The Kelsey's were in the building.
Well, that's a different kind of magic.
That's
that
right.
That is a different kind of, I mean, we've seen what the Kelsey's can do for those teams, and it's wonderful. I mean, you know, they've reached a lot of Super Bowls, and now you got Taylor behind them. That's a lot of power.
When we return, it is time for the Kings Roundtable. Styles and Watkins, Sactown Sports.
Sports. Check us out on YouTube. Search Sactown Sports and subscribe.
We are joined. It's that time. Kings Roundtable. Brendan Nunes, Frankie Cardicelli. How you doing, fellas?
Great. Great to be here. Looking forward to some Kings-Lakers action.
Oh,
looking
forward
to talking about a smoked 20-point lead. Let's dive into it.
Great. Let's start there. We'll turn the page. We'll turn the page pretty soon here as far as the Lakers tonight, because it's a huge game for both sides, really. But let's first close the chapter on Bulls Kings, and really a lot of the things Chris and I handled yesterday when there was a lot of hate towards Mike Brown and some of the decisions, and we were trying to figure out where the Jimmys and the Joes have to execute and where the coaches lacked some of the decision making. What did you guys think? Did you guys have any problem with anything on the Mike Brown coaching side of it?
I mean, I think there was a stretch in that third quarter. He got put in a tough situation, I will say, rotationally, because Domantas Sabonis gets four fouls pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. Same for Keegan Murray. Those two guys are in big foul trouble. That's two of your big three right there. And it's De'Aaron's first game back, and I think he probably missed about three games somewhere in there, right, with that knee bruise. So maybe you don't want to overwork him, but when De'Aaron goes out when he usually does, Domas gets his fourth foul. He ends up taking Domas out the game and runs without either one of them for a good stretch until close to the end of that third quarter, and the Kings give up a bit of a run there. He says they got good shots, but that he did acknowledge that he probably should have gone back to Fox a little earlier, so I get that. And I understand the frustration with Keon not playing over Davion, but I don't know that it makes that much of a difference.
It was 9 minutes. We're talking 9 minutes.
Right, right.
So. And Davion did not play poorly that game. He had, what, no, 6 points, okay. Something like that? He had a bunch of layups. So, yeah, that was the big one. And we all sit next to each other. That lineup was weird. And clearly it was not by design, and he was trying to figure out what to do. But even still, they lost some of that momentum. They went into the fourth up 14, which I know in this era's NBA isn't much, but you're up 14 against the lowly Bulls at home. I don't know if that decision is exactly – if you want to give Mike Brown that, sure. I don't know how big of a piece of the pie it was.
I mean, I look at that last couple of minutes of the third where the Fox and Sabonis minutes happened, and I mean, I don't have the data in front of me, but I would imagine that's happened. Like, if we're looking at, like, a pie chart, that's probably happened in 2% or less mm-hmm. of games this year where both players are available. Like, that's very rare. And the lead dropped from 22 to 14 in that time frame. I don't know if that's the exact window you can look at, which cost him the game. I think it's a lot wider than that. I mean, you go the last 15 minutes of the game, you score 18 points on, you know, 30% shooting, or actually 20% shooting if you factor in the last couple of minutes of the third. It just was a complete meltdown all over across the board. I mean, Malik Monk goes scoreless in the second half. De'Aaron Fox, a point in the fourth. These are rare things that just, it was a perfect storm of bad. Everything had to go wrong for the Kings, and it did. But we've seen it happen in multiple games this year, which makes it kind of harder to swallow. But a lot went into it outside of just that schematic, that blunder down the stretch.
I definitely feel like, I mean, we've talked about it quite a bit, and I think that it's, you're right, Frankie. First off, that's the first thing that I said too, was like hindsight being a bit 20/20 in that moment. Like, it goes bad, and so everybody says points at that moment, and it's like, what are you doing? But Mike Brown never does that. He almost makes a point to go out of his way to make sure one of those guys is always on the floor. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that the one time it seems like he did do it, it kind of bit him in the butt. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, that's not really something that I would be super upset at, because he does it so unfrequently. That's not a word, but the question I wanted to ask you guys, we were actually just talking about this too. What did you think of the Chris Duarte tech? Did you feel like, because that happens in the third quarter during that same stretch we're talking about, did you feel like that moment had any impact on the game? Or did you feel like, because I know Mike Brown talked about it after, did you kind of feel like that was, again, just kind of hindsight being 20/20? Or in that moment, did you feel like, that might end up shifting things?
I think it was like the moment that things shifted, but I don't know that I necessarily like point it because of the tech, you know, that is a moment where I'm like, okay, things started to kind of go downhill even a little bit beforehand. Yeah. But that one obviously is a little bit more of an identifiable moment. And I get his frustration. There's an angle, like, he does kind of get an arm to the face after the rebound comes down. He gets bumped by Drummond. Like,
he was tripping.
It was over the top. I will say I kind of like seeing a little bit of passion from the Kings out there.
Sure. Interesting.
Because how often does that happen? You know, and not that that's, you don't want texts left and right or anything, but I like a little bit of passion that's going
up 19
on
in
and
that
the physicality.
Too.
So I don't know. I don't hate it, but it definitely was a moment where things started to go downhill afterwards.
Yeah. Ultimately, in a situation like that, and, you know, we had people calling in yesterday saying, asking the questions about De'Aaron Fox and having that number one, the bottom line is, watching DeRozan and Kobe White do what they did, that is what is going to leave a bad taste in people's mouths. That is not about Mike Brown. Okay, you got to blitz one guy because you don't have the horses to defend because Keegan is in foul trouble. And you're sitting there and you're getting cooked by DeRozan. All of a sudden, he's Steph Curry. He's making three-pointers now?
DeMarvelous.
Two. He was DeMarvelous. Ooh. He's making three-pointers. Kobe White, who did not take a shot in the first quarter, he starts cooking. And you got your one guy's in foul trouble in Sabonis. You got your other guy, De'Aaron Fox, who got stuck at 20 points, knowing how important this game is. And then you have Malik Monk, who, as well as he played last game, gives you nothing in the second half. To me, right there, your three biggest players and three biggest playmakers, they came up short. Mike Brown can't help you with that. He can't help you with that.
No, like I said, perfect storm of everything going wrong. And by the way, just very jarring to look at. Kobe White and DeMar DeRozan combined for 52 points in the second half. The Sacramento Kings as a team score 53. But one thing I highlighted in my preview this morning was Keegan Murray's been playing pretty good basketball. Like, he's shooting 45% from three over the past eight games. Good start for Keegan. Second half, I think he only took two shots. He took one in the fourth quarter.
This keeps happening.
That keeps happening. And maybe it's because of De'Aaron Fox coming back and the offense is different. There were two games where Keegan played very well and Fox was out. That obviously heightens shot opportunities and volume for other players. But that balance we saw last year with the Kings, again, the same exact roster that we're seeing. The 1-7 is the same, or 1-8, I guess, is the same. The consistency is not there from these players. I mean, outside of Domantas Sabonis, we're not seeing the same thing where you know what you're getting from each player every given night. You know you're going to get a double-double, a triple-double from Sabonis at this point, who had one of his worst games of the season the other night, mind you. I think he finished, I can't remember what it was from the field. I have it right here. Sabonis finished from the field 7-19. That's just very rare. That's,
I think he started like 1-9.
On it, shots that normally he makes that were good looks that went in and out. And again, the Bulls have the top points in the paint defense for whatever reason. They don't have Rudy Gobert down there. They just pack the paint and they collapse in on people when they're near the basket, I guess. But
still got a double-double, though.
Still got a double-double. Still got his double-double.
18-21 double-double.
I guess I didn't get to talk to you guys about the your thoughts on the Denver, him coming in at the end of the Denver game. So I'll have to get your thoughts on that again.
But on your point of the paint defense, you pointed it out actually as we were coming into the game. Chicago allows least points in the paint. And I think a lot of what it is like Alex Caruso, Kobe White, they play four guards a lot, and those guys dig down a lot and just have really active hands. Caruso specifically is ridiculously good at that, obviously. Maybe one of the best in the league, really. And the Kings kept getting, it was part of the game plan. Like, this means we're going to take a lot of spray threes. Do not get too deep in the paint. And when you get there, play off 2 feet. Don't play off one. Put yourself in a tough decision, a tough spot where you're forced to make a decision. And often they just would get too deep, or you kick out to shooters and guys are hesitant to shoot. I think those were the two big things. You could think of a Trey Lyles one late in that game. He catches and like takes half a second even. It's not an instant swing. Like all these split second decisions matter a lot. And I think just getting a little too deep, not playing off 2 feet, led to those 17 turnovers. Ugh. And that was part of the game plan that they just did not execute on and not pulling the trigger on threes enough.
Yeah.
Mike Brown's fault.
Right. If the game plan is wrong, or if the game plan wasn't a good one, that's one thing. Yeah. If you have a game plan and your team deviates from said game plan, you're just going to throw your hands up. And I had somebody else on my specific tweet when I said, what is it that you guys are asking for? And they said, oh, well, on that coming out of the timeout when they ended up throwing the ball away, Mike Brown should have saw that De'Aaron didn't have anything and call another one. You're not going to fry your last timeout with, 36 seconds left?
I will say Mike said yesterday he was like trying to do his own mental count. And, you know, if he felt like that pass wasn't going to be on target or knew that it was going to be tough, that he was going to call it. That he or De'Aaron, like, feel free to call it at that moment, you know?
Yeah,
so,
and neither of them did.
But the complication with that play is Domas had fouled out, and Harrison Barnes is playing the center role that he has never played really in this out of timeout play. And typically that puts Vucevic on him. And typically the last resort in that play is to lob it over the top to Domas. Mm-hmm. But instead Harrison's there with Vucevic on him. And De'Aaron said after the game, he didn't feel great about making that pass. And obviously what he decided on was kind of this in between, not great thing that he threw up to Malik.
Yeah. Well, when we return, we talk Kings defense, and Brendan Nunes has posted a video on X, and if you are a defensive-minded coach, player, or fan, you should probably hide your eyes. It is not great. We discuss how low the Kings have fallen in their defensive rating post-All-Star break. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Here with the Sacktown Sports Kings Insiders, Frankie Cardicelli and Brendan Nunes. And Brendan just posted something, what was that, like an hour ago, Brendan?
Something like that.
And it's pretty ridiculous. I mean, post-All-Star break, 28th? How many teams are there in the NBA?
30. You know who's horrible, actually, by a decent margin? 7 points worse than the Kings. Dallas Mavericks.
Oof. Wow.
Just a layup line.
And then you get the Washington Wizards, Sacramento Kings, Los Angeles Lakers.
Ooh.
But Kings, 3-3 post All-Star break, 119.7 defensive rating. That's 28th. On the other end, offensively, they are 8th, 117.6, I think.
Right. So we're back to last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we've been back to last year, I feel like.
I guess, yeah.
But, yeah, not great. And it feels like, specifically these last few games, listen, Kevin Huerter's 6'7", and he really tries. Other teams target him. Mm-hmm. And it's happened a lot recently. And I'm sure that if you're a different team and you're okay, let's watch back these handful of last Kings games right before we play them, they're like, oh, wow, this team was really able to take advantage of Kevin Huerter, you know, and maybe we should try to do that. And, yeah, it's happened a lot these couple games. Harrison Barnes sometimes. I heard you guys talking about Alex Len in that last game against Kobe White. Alex Len was getting destroyed. Mm-hmm. I mean, they try to have him, like, up at the level of the screen. Kobe White's going to go right past you. Mm-hmm. It's just they try a lot of different things. The double teams are just a little too late, and the rotations afterwards take half a second. You have to already know where you're supposed to go and move before it happens instead of being reactionary. And I think there's just, like, slight timing. They don't have good defenders is pretty much what I'm getting at here.
But that's the weak point.
Like, it's getting worse.
It's putting everybody else a step behind on their rotations. Like, everyone's a step behind, or more and more cases. Like, you see guys having to break for the corner and close out on a wide-open shooter. And we've seen opposing teams have season highs, or opposing players have career highs or season highs on a nightly basis. So, yeah, it kind of comes back to that point.
Keegan struggled last game, too. And he's the one that you like to feel good about.
Right.
Like, I feel like De'Aaron at some points is picking up DeRozan later in that game. And it's like, he's making him work, but there's a size difference. This isn't
going
to work.
When he had already gotten going.
Right. And at that point, it's too late.
Yeah. No, and I was telling Alan the other day, I was watching NBA.com allows you to look at all the clips if you click on the stat. I looked at DeMar DeRozan's 9 of 12 in the second half. A lot of those things are on HB and just kind of getting cooked. Like, I mean, it's a bit like Bam Adebayo the other day against Domantas Sabonis, where it really wasn't anything special they were doing. It was just one-on-one. I'm better than you. I can get to the basket. And it's concerning, man. Like, this team was supposed to – like, that was what was supposed to be different about this year than last year was it was going to be last year's offense with a new and improved defense. And now we're seeing – not only is the offense not same as it was last year, the defense is also worse. And so as we're heading into this playoff stretch or towards the playoffs, like, what is this team's calling card going to be if it's not going to be we are an excellent offense on every night? Like, I just, you know, it's tough to – and when you see the inconsistencies that they've had, like, what is the – and this is more of a broad question. I'm not looking for specifics, but, like, what's the hope for the playoffs if you guys can't really figure it out in the regular season?
Prayer.
That's the thing, though. Like, we joke, but, like, I was on with Dave and Jason yesterday, and, like, I heard the same conversation with Katie this morning when she was on with those guys, and everyone is searching for answers right now. And all the things you just laid out and all the questions we are having, I'm sure that they're asking those questions internally, too, because how can they go from a team that can score 130 in one night on 50-40, you know, I guess a good night from the line for them is like 75%. So we'll say 50-40, 75 shooting, they can turn around and lay an egg the next night or lose their rhythm from three. We don't really know who this team is right now, and we're at the point where they're 60 games in. We're not at that point where it's November, December, right, and we're looking at, okay, it's been 20 games or 30 games, we know who this team is. That's a scary thing, I think, for the Kings and for their opponents, is you really don't know which Kings team you're going to get. The Kings could come out in LA tonight and completely beat the brakes off the Lakers, or they could look like they're on the way to it and having a 20-point lead and then lose that game. It's just very, very scary right now for the Kings and their opponents, because you do not know who they are. To me, they're the most unpredictable team in the NBA. You really do not know.
And we might be at the point where that is who they are. Like, that's the identity of the team, is that since they are so offensive-based, that there's so much variance in what you're going to get night to night.
Yeah.
They are just the inconsistent thing. It's the only thing you can expect at this point.
And I don't think it's just the Kings either. Like, you look at NBA TV, right, or NBA Today right now, it says Dallas Mavericks, does the Dallas Mavericks defensive issues outweigh, which is a funny word, shout out Christopher Lott, outweigh Luka Doncic's brilliance. Like, I think that it's not just the Kings that have issues being so offensively centric. And I think that's why you find this cluster of Suns and Pelicans and Kings and Mavs, because it feels unique to us. But really, it just feels like this is how the league is. It's either you're awesome, you're great, you're able to take care of both sides of the floor, or really, it seems like a lot of teams have kind of followed the Kings' model of last year and said, we're going to at least be a really fun offense, and that's going to win us 45 games minimum.
The Suns had a 22-point lead yesterday.
Yeah.
They scored 12 points in the fourth quarter, go to OT against Denver, and they end up winning the game in overtime. But they had a 22-point lead and still had to go to overtime because they scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. The Celtics, clear best team in the league, is up 22, scores 17 points in the fourth quarter. Not Max Drews, Dean Wade. We're just going to go D-Wade after that one. And they end up losing that game. Like, this happens so often in today's NBA.
Yeah.
That's not excusable, but it is fairly common.
But the problem is that is happening, but then you also have games where they just don't show up.
Yes.
You can't do all of that.
So I have
a theory. You can't lose in eight different ways.
I think that their high-paced offense and just willingness to shoot really early in the shot clock means that you can come back from games really quick, but you can also blow leads really quick because you're not holding on to the ball for that long.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm curious, too. Sorry, not to cut. What do you guys think about just in general, too, to tie in with the inconsistencies? The fact that the Kings seem to play well against the top four teams, more specifically the top three teams in the West, but then struggle against Chicago. We saw them struggle out the break against the Spurs and have obviously struggled against some of the worst teams in the NBA. Does that make you overall feel better about the team, or does it just make you more confused and more angry when it comes to trying to figure out, again, just like the true identity of who they are?
My answer is frustrating for, myself and probably for fans as well, but I think it's a good thing because I think it proves that when there's a sense of urgency and when they're really up against it, they play well. Which is why I'm expecting them to play well tonight. I might have egg on my face, but I'm expecting them to play well tonight because this is a very important game that matters in the standings. This is a game where if you lose this game tonight, your lead goes to a half game over the Lakers. You want to put it to 2.5. But against those top four teams, or top three teams, like you said, the urgency is there. They know they have to be up for a team that is, one of the best in the league. And you look at tonight's game, but Chicago, or teams that they've lost to, the Charlottes, the Detroit Portland. Pistons, the Portlands, like they just kind of let their guard down. And I feel like that they have this personality of a team that knows they're good, but they're not that good. They get too comfortable. They get complacent. They get in these big leagues and they kind of take their foot off the gas. They aren't really in a position to do that, and especially not now where the West is a total just nightmare and you have six teams trying to get two spots for top six. But they get up for these big games. They get up for teams that are near them in the standings or ahead of them, and that's why I have faith that they're going to be that good team tonight, that good version of the Kings tonight.
The problem is we're getting to the point now where a guy like LeBron is turning it on, and you could have a good game and lose. That's the problem. So when you have somebody down, that's why it's so important to get those wins because they could play. It could be a great game. It could be a barn burner. They could lose. And it's still going to count the same way as if they got their doors blown off. That's what I'm worried about. I'm not necessarily worried about the Kings not showing up tonight. I'm just worried about the Lakers
not getting the result.
Just not getting the result. The Lakers showing up in a way that they really haven't shown up all season. This is what they're built to do now. They got Anthony Davis, who is, they call him street clothes, things like that. You got LeBron James, who has been in the league since people were babies. And now is when they're going to try to turn it on. Now, they're not going to win a championship, but they could be very annoying towards the end of the season, and I hope that's not the case, especially tonight. But the Kings have put themselves in a very precarious situation. When we return, we continue the conversation with the insiders, Brendan Nunes and Frankie Carticelli. Also, your chance to win Chris Brown tickets here at 1 p.m. And Doug, we see you on the line as well. You have a question or comment for the insiders. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.